Thank you, Sean, for taking your seat. Appreciate it. Today we will be talking about geometry. So, thanks again for all of for everyone coming out tonight. I'm going to introduce Sherwin Bitsui, who, like Steven Schroeder, is a friend of mine, but a different kind of friend. Do you play ball at all, Sherwin? No, I didn't think so. So never mind. I'm not going to introduce him. I'm just going to go home now. Actually, when we were driving over here, I've got this big pickup truck that is from the rental car company, and he taught me this great word in Dena. For the word for rain is Twa. Sounds like rain, right? It's really great. Anyway, that has nothing to do with the introduction, but I really thought that was awesome, Twa. So it's not Twa-ing. So how did you say it's raining?
Water.
So it's just water. It's just any kind of water. Anyway, I'm just stunned by this word, and I'm going to figure out a way to work it into a poem. So I'm going to introduce Sherwin Bitsui, who has come to us all the way from Arizona, you know, where it wasn't raining, to this place where we are now. I realize that I have this resistance to the new criticism that we get shoved down our throats, those of us who are English majors. So I usually don't talk about the accolades, but I'm going to talk about it today for Sherwin. Sherwin is originally from White Cone, Arizona, on the Navajo Reservation. Currently he lives in Tucson, where it doesn't rain, but there's lots of gang violence. He holds an AFA from the Institute of American Indian Arts Creative Writing Program, and one day soon he'll graduate from the University of Arizona. Is that where he is? Yeah. He's a recipient of the 2000-2001 Individual Poet Grant from the Whittier Biner Foundation, and the 1999 Truman Capote Creative Writing Fellowship, and a Lannan Foundation MARFA residency, and more recently, the big baller won himself a Whiting Writers Award, which, as I remember, that was like $45,000, something like that. And so I'm just going to step back for a second and say, Sherwin got his $45,000 as a check, right, which is a kind of hard check, the cash. But he was in New York, and a couple of us were in Chicago. So Sherwin came to Chicago, check in tow, to visit us in Chicago, on the south side of Chicago, where you can't get to where we were unless you take a bunch of buses and subways and walk. And so here's Sherwin, this awesome fellow with a $45,000 check in his bag, walking through the south side of Chicago, just stomping through like it's nothing. I tried to figure out a way to integrate that into his poems, but I couldn't. All I can say is thanks for coming to see us, Sherwin. That was awesome. Now here's the other stuff. In the poem Northern Sun, Bitsui's narrator says simply, "This time we feel the padlocks snap." I mentioned this remarkable image from his first collection because it is exactly the opposite of how I felt when I heard him read his poetry for the first time. Sherwin and I comprised exactly one half of the poets of color at the 2005 Festival of New American Poets put on by the Poetry Society of America. One other of those poets was Lyra Van Cleef Stefanen, and she'll be here in March. So, you know, all we got to do is find Thomas Sayers Ellis, and that's all of the minorities that were at this 15-poet conference put on by the Poetry Society. I knew of Sherwin's work before that time, but hearing him read was my first real introduction to the possibilities his words manifest. Rather than any kind of enclosure, his words brawled out in their own way to versus conventions, kind of like a cat does when it's put in a bathtub. Not only were Sherwin's words fierce on the page, they were prophetic as well. So I'm going to tell you a little story about this first night that I met Sherwin. The first night I met Sherwin was the same night I found out that my wife was pregnant. And I had told, of course, my mom and dad, but the first person I told who was not a member of my family was Sherwin. Because I felt like I could tell him that and he would understand this somehow. I told Sherwin, you know, half conscious, because I drank like three quarters of a bottle of Wild Turkey when I found out that I was going to be a dad. You know, and Sherwin looks at me, and he looks at my wife, and he's like, "It's a girl." And so I drank the other bottle of Wild Turkey, but more, but the fact is that it was a girl, and that was this crazy thing. It wasn't like the 50-50 chance. Sherwin was right, and my daughter knows it, and he knows it, even though he's been wrong other times, he said. He said he's tried to do this like sort of mojo thing other times, and it didn't work. But this particular time, it was right. So, that has nothing to do with his poems other than the fact that somehow they are prophetic in their own nature as well. So I'm really pleased that we've got Sherwin here. And please welcome Sherwin Bitsui.
It's great to be here. Beautiful place. I was looking forward to... Hey, you got rain. I'm all about the rain. I was driving through to Phoenix a couple of days ago, and my prophecies sort of didn't work out because I was like convinced that my sister was going to have a boy, and I'm like, it's going to be a boy because it's like fighting her every day, She had a really tough time with this pregnancy. But then it turned out to be this beautiful little girl, so I'm an uncle again. And as we're driving from Tucson to Phoenix, there are these sort of curtains of rain, just really thin slices of rain, where you would drive through, it'd be really dry. Then you would go through this little rain shower for like about a mile or less than a mile. Then you'd be out of it and be like nothing happened. So I was calling them rooms of rain, so that was really interesting. But yeah, beautiful. Thank you, Adrian. Yeah, it's just nice. And thank you to River Styx. Thank you to Duff's. And a lot. I'm in the heart of this continent. I'm sort of a memory of this continent in a lot of ways. And I'm of the Navajo people, the Bitterwater people. I was born and raised on the Navajo Rez, Irvation. So for those of you guys who don't know what the Rez is, they call them reserves in Canada. So. But this and you have this beautiful, most beautiful place here, Cahokia, which is really an amazing place. And the opening poem in Flood Song was actually inspired by a walk through Cahokia about 2 years ago. I actually got invited down to Carbondale, and I'll share that with you when I read from Flood Song, my new book. I'll read a couple of poems from Shapeshift, and then we'll go into Flood Song. Shapeshift is my first book, and this is a couple of poems from there. And also thank you to Stephen, fellow reader, that I really enjoyed the work, and thank you so much. I know poetry is really tough. Sometimes I don't know if I want to do it forever. Atlas. Tonight, I draw a raven's wing inside a circle, measured a half second before it expands into a hand. I wrap its worn grip over our feet as we thrash against pine needles inside the earthen pot. He sings an elegy for handcuffs, whispers a moment of silence at the crunch of rush hour traffic, and speaks a dialect of a forklift, lifting like cedar smoke over the mesas acred to the furthest block. Two headlights flare from the blue dusk. The eyes of ravens peer at coyote biting his tail in the forklift, shaped like another reservation, another canceled check. One finger pointed at him. That one, dishwasher. He dies like this, with emergency lights blinking through the creases of his ribbon shirt. A light buzzed loud and snapped above the kitchen sink. I didn't notice the sting of the warning. Coyotes scattering headlights instead of stars. howling dogs silenced by the thought of the moon. Constellations rattling from the atmosphere of a quivering gourd. How many Indians have stepped onto train tracks, hearing the hoofbeats of horses in the bend above the river rushing at them like a cluster of veins scrawled into words on the unmade bed. In the cave on the backside of a lie, soldiers eye the birth of a new atlas. One more mile, they say. One more mile. And I think this will kind of segue us into Shapeshift was a lot about transformation. Everything was transforming and becoming one other thing. And a lot of it was written about 10 years ago, you know, prior to the millennium. And some of these poems in this first book were written during 9/11. So there's a lot of that kind of anxiety and fear of speaking your mind during the Bush years. So this is part of a poem called Drought. And this kind of leads us into Flood Song. The noose in my dream becomes a deer and shakes dust from its eyelids. It wants to cry for rain, but we are keeping the rain in styrofoam boxes at the bus station. The grandmother was out there shaking a stick at the coal miners. That night, she cried black tears and wove her hair onto the feathers of a visiting night owl. Juniper roots surface in the dishwater. When one dreams of a mouth covered in white chalk, speaking only in English, it is a voice that wants to be cut free from a country whose veins swim with axes and scissors. So one of the major dilemmas I think we're facing, I think as an indigenous person in this country, is that a lot of us are, not really caring for the language enough, you know, to really kind of push it through. But it's working. I mean, we have a lot of immersion plans, but for sort of like my grandmother's generation and their generation, it was pretty much forced assimilation. So a lot of the thinking behind a lot of tribal people is this notion that your language is less than, you know, your language is to be obsolete. You speak only English. And a lot of times they were beaten for such purposes. So I think this new generation of native writers hopefully will kind of bring the language back. And it comes to this poem, which is the word for water in Navajo, Twa. And if you think of, and this poem is really special, and this is why I'm so happy to be here, is that I was actually walking in Cahokia, in the main sort of plaza area, and I would see these trees, and I would walk toward the tree. And for some reason, you know, all of a sudden the wind would blow, and I would see a little leaf fall to the ground. Then another one would follow it. And I wrote in my journal, and I drew a little picture of Cahokia, the mounds and stuff, and then I drew on top of it, I drew twa, 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 down from the top, above it, so it ended up in my book. Flood Song. And some of you guys might want to just close your eyes and just let it pour over you, because you know, it's like a mini movie, I guess. It just sort of flashes in and out. Toi, 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 toi. I bite my eyes shut between these songs, They're the sounds of blackened insect husk folded over elk teeth in a tin can. They're gull wings fattening on cold air, flapping in a paper sack on the chlorine-stained floor. They curl in corners spiked and black-thatched, stomp across the living room ceiling, pull our hair one strand at a time from electric sockets, and paint our stems with sand in the kitchen sink. They speak a double helix, zigzag a tree trunk, bark the tips of its leaves with cracked amber. They plant whispers where shouts incinerate into hisses. Stepping through the drum's vibration, I hear gasoline trickle alongside the fence and panorama of the reed we climbed in from, and slide my hands into shoes of ocean water. I step onto the gravel path of swans paved across lake scent, wrap this blank page around the exclamation point slammed between us. The storm lying outside, its fetal shell, folds back its antelope ears and hears its heart pounding through powdery earth underneath the dancers, flecking dust from their ankles to thunder into rain. I am unable to pry my fingers from the axe, unable to utter a word without grandfather's accent rippling around the stone flung into his thinning mattress. Years before, he would have named this season by flattening a field where grasshoppers jumped into black smoke. A crow snaps its beak over and over again. The pass is a blurry splotch of red, crosshatched with neon lights on the drive south. Windows pushed down, you scoop pellets of canned air and ocean across sand dunes, across the waning lick of moonlight on the dashboard to crease the horizon between petals of carved snow. Bluebirds chirp icy rocks from their stomachs and crash with wings caked heavy with the dark mud of a gunmetal sky to the earth's bandages, shivering with cold spells and convulsions in the market underneath an avalanche of apples. A red-tailed hawk scrapes a sandstone wall with its beak. A shower of sparks skates across the morning sky. You think this bottle will open a canyon wall and light a trail trampled by gloved hands as you inhale earth, wind, water through the gasoline nozzle at trail's end. A flint spear driven into the key switch. You think you can return to that place where your mother held her sleeves above the rising tides, saying, "We are here again, on the road covered with television snow. We are here again. The song has thudded." Bison horns twist into the sides of trains, winding through the broth-filled eyes of hens squawking from the icebox. Shock coils from the jet engine's roar erupt from the memory of splintered eagle wing bone. Pinned down with icicles on the loosening floor, an alarm clock wails from speaker box to speaker box, probing for hornet's nests inside the tourmaline seeds of dawn. Its scalp scalpeled alongside what is ours, its memory of bone axes X'd out with chrome engine paint. Flicking off the light switch, lichen buds the curved creases of a mind pondering the mesquite tree's dull ache as it gathers its leaves around clouds of spotted doves, calling them in rows of 12 back from their winter sleep. Doves' eyes black as nightfall shiver on the foam coasts of an Arctic dream where whale ribs clasp and fasten you to the language of shifting ice. Seeing into those eyes, you uncoil their telephone wires, gather their inaudible lions with plastic forks, tongue their salty ribbons, and untie their weedy stems from their prickly fingers. Ye stop to wonder what like sounds like when held under glacier water, how Nahakos feels under the weight of all that loss. I cover my eyes with electrical wires, see yellow dawn, eclipse stop signs, turn green and screech into phosphorescence. Each flickering finger, a memory of a flashing yellow sign, blink between charcoal sheets of monsoon rain, then slices through the thawing of our hunger with the cracked eaves of a shattered house. Its autobiographical muscle, stringing trees into a forest, convulses only to be flattened under its metallic leaves and sold as bricks for its basement of fire. What land have you cast from the blotted out region of your face? What nation stung by watermarks was filmed out of extinction and brought forth resembling frost? What offspring must jump through the eye of birth to be winked at when covered with brick sweat? What ache piled its planks on the corner pier, now crumbles onto motionless water, sniffed at by forest smoke? What makes this song a string of beads seized by cement cracks when the camera climbs through the basement window, winter clouds coiling through its speckled lens? What season cannot locate an eye in the dark of the sound of the sun gyrating into red ochre after I thought you noticed my language was half wren, half pigeon, and together we spoke a wing pattern on the wall that was raised to keep us out there where calling became culling, distance, distanced in a mere scrape of enamel on yellow teeth? What father woke, turned over his wife, she didn't want to, but he pushed until the baby leapt through. Now, 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 strummed into a chorus of burn marks on ceilings where police sirens fruit magpie skulls on trees of monsoon lightning. What is how the song chimed in the wilderness? Pinched from sunlight's jagged leaf, the singer's skin, a fingerprint on muddy river water, crowns our whispers with sharp talons. His shrill cry, scraped down to a thumbnail of television knobs, becomes the wailing that returns to the reservation. You follow him across sand dunes, warm his hand with your breath, and place inside the buckskin satchel harp strings of reassembled moonlight, thumbprints of ocean water, and a key to the back door of a burning church. He sponges the deck of their leaking boat invisible on the horizon, spilling its names on rusted knives to make it stop, sigh, then whisper sleep to animals kicking loose the oven's door. The tick of the clock blotted the exit from the mine. Hours before the ravens could swirl into this new instinct, this new hue, pressing open the wound, a field of gnats foaming from its half smile. I strike a wet match on his wooden mine, stash my invitation behind his waterless eyes, and pencil in the first unmarked box, dark matter in the blue scarf, crumpled map, smashed compass. Back there, I can feel the faces of wolves. His music fermented the cheek of a songbird inscribed on dough meat and handed the oven its first match before he collapsed on his one new idea, circled by tears underwater where a buoy strapped to a glass plow cradled the farmer's pitchfork and scythe. Obsidian blades in here, he said. You will count two in the silences between the gaps of our bodies. 3 in the fibrous matter of her crossing, 4 in the nurse's gown as she reaches in, 5 in the rough cage of our silence, cylindrical in the mind that wants a chameleon from the gray that crowds in. Breath, steam, who could tell the difference? An axe in his hand, he heard a crow digging wren eggs from beaks tied with eyelash hair, and asked the summer, what happened in the ellipses? What happened when gunfire blew into their speech and left one language hanging by a nail at the entrance of mouths flooded with such things as the down of drowned herons and the mud-covered hooves of drought kicking at the rain-stained earth, devoured by minutes and seconds, sticking to their shoes like sap, their onions peeled back, bees dangling like half moths out of their eyes. He wanted to hold back gas-soaked doves with a questioning glance. He wanted the clock to tick downwind from this gavel and pew, from this leash, bucket, drainpipe, and mildewed cracker, from the mine's muddy swans served on a platter with lemon rinds, from spiders scurrying over its bone-polished surface, from crosshatches punched into its shredded time card, from the desert near the tree line where the molting must have begun, where crushed bodies heave, warm, jelly-like, in the thicket at the foot of the wandering, perched inside their velveteen shirts, chirping crimson, then vermilion, then rust, as the water's song wilts the petals of splayed bullets, spilling from ceramic pots into stovepipes, as the yelping of lambs rutted with wagon tracks, bubbles from glass tubes, triangular in their circular sleep patterns. Then we'll skip ahead. A lot of crazy stuff happens in this book, so I hope you're hanging on here. So there eventually is a singer, a person who sings, who enters the work, and I think the singer also is like a poet. And he kind of does some things and he sees things happen. And a corn fell at the bottom of a sandstone canyon, wearing the gloves of this song tightly over closed ears. The bursting sun presses licks of flame into our throats, swelling with ghost dogs, nibbling on hands that roped off our footprints, keeping what is outside ours tucked beneath the warmth of their feet, cooling to zero, as they swarm luminous landmines like gnats, as thunder shakes white sand from wet hair, as police sirens trickle from water jars onto squash blossoms, as starlight, opened inside a darkened room, begins to tell its story from end to beginning again. I sense the knife in your past, its sharp edge shanked from the canyon stream, a silver trickle between the book jacket, Nihizad, our language, peeled open inside a diabetic mouth. The waters of my clans flash flooded. I fell from the white of its eyes. Our fathers had no children to name their own. No baby's cry to place between argument and arguments. The commercial flashed a blue path across the lakes of our veins. The bluest lint, a rock in the ear, told our tongues entwined that I was reaching for the cornfield inside you. That I was longing to outlive this compass, pointing toward my skull, gauzed inside this long, terrible whisper, damp in a desert canyon, whitewashed by the ache of fog lights, reaching to unravel my combed hair. And I retraced and traced over my fingertips. Here magma, there shore, and on the peninsula of his finger pointing west, a bell rope woven from optic nerves is tethered to Mustangs galloping from a nation lifting its first page through the manhole. Burn marks in the saddle horn, static in the ear that cannot sever cries from wailing. I did not blink shut. I could have hatched the egg of the imagined reservation and not fear the quickening of my blood or theirs pounding upright in the money vault. I walk my hair's length over tire ruts, crush seed pods with thumbnails, push kernels of corn into dove's nests on the gnarled branches of our drowned lungs. Mining saguaro pulp from garden rock, squeezing coarse black hair, I arrive at a map of a face buried in spring snow. With a plastic cup, I scrape the enamel chips of morning songs from the kitchen sink and breathe through my eyelids, glimpsing the thawing of our flat whirl. I dial into the blue skin of the map's stiff pulse, emerald spill from the skull's cavernous wail. But nightfall is still darkest in the middle stanza of the poem arcing 20 miles past forgiveness. The poem held out to the wind speaks juniper to the wilderness. As August slithers into September's copper pipes, searching for the paw print of a waterfall on the mine's lunar surface. Here I thread nightfall into the Rhone's black mane. Here I peel a paper mask from the hare's moist cartilage. Here tornadoes twist into the loom's black yarn. But the premonition beginning with three masts and a cross still mushrooms over the groans of husbands and wives, folding their petals outward from their salt-coated bodies, calling us home. Nihiyaje nihanenza, nihiyaje nihanenza. Our child, you have returned to us. Our child, you have returned to us. This is the last section. I wanted to swallow the song's flowers, swim diagonally its arched back, its shadow stinging my hands with black pollen. We were on the same surgical table waiting for the surgeons to carve us back into shape. The drum pulsed somewhere in the dark, and I heard a woman unbraiding her hair. I felt morning songs leap from the Hoan smoke hole and curl outward from the roof of the sky, gliding through us like rain. I sang until the sun rose. The shadows of my face grew into a swallow with folded wings and darted into the fire. A cloud became a skull and crashed to the earth above Black Mesa. The cloud wanted to slip through the coal mines and unleash its horses. It wanted to crack open bulldozers and spray their yoke over the hills so that a new birth cry would awaken the people who had fallen asleep. It wanted to push her asymmetrical ramblings into the weft of a storm blanket, dye it hazel, and sink it into the rising waters. A city dragged its bridges behind it and finally collapsed in a supermarket, asking for the first apple that was ever bitten. No one questioned the sand anymore. No one untucked themselves from their bodies and wandered the streets without knowing their clans. Everyone planted corn in their bellies and became sunlight washing down plateaus with deer running out of them. The phone was ringing through it all. The line was busy when I picked the axe and chose the first tree to chop down. Thank you very much for listening. So I have some tequila.